Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. She's one of the most influential women in U.S. history, and many Americans still don't know her name. Wilma Mankiller was the first female principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. The documentary Mankiller airs this month on SDPB-TV, beginning Wednesday, March 14th at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain, again that night at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. Today on In the Moment, we welcome Valerie Redhorse. She's director and producer of Mankiller. She's of Cherokee ancestry and owner, founder of Redhorse Native Productions. Her body of work spans over two decades of film and television content creation and production. She joins me now on the phone. Valerie Redhorse, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
This is such a fascinating documentary because I had heard of, many things about Wilma Mankiller, but not the extent about her life that this provides. Let's begin for people with this sort of formative, transition when she's about 10 years old and has to relocate. Take us there and tell us what that time was like for
Absolutely.
Wilma Mankiller.
And I would add that I'm in your camp. Obviously, I knew who Wilma was, and I respected her as a Cherokee leader, and I followed her somewhat. But, making the film, I just learned so much more about her. And I think everywhere we go, people say the same thing. A lot of them have never heard of her, but those that had said, boy, we just really didn't know. Nothing really taught in school books, anything like that. So this has just been such a great opportunity. But right around 10 or 11, she was relocated, her entire family, on a program that was launched by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And many, many Indian families were, followed this similar path, not just from Oklahoma, but from many territories, even up where you are. And were taken into larger cities on this sort of relocation attempt to bring them into areas where they might find jobs. And it was just not a very well-supported program or well-thought-out program, as some government programs tend to be. And so she really was just uprooted and kind of dumped in the Bay Area. And her family struggled, and they struggled emotionally as well as financially, but it ended up being a real positive. And this was sort of the repeating theme of her life, is she would take every negative and turn it into something very, very positive, which is really good life lessons. And so from this sort of negative experience of being uprooted and relocated into almost a foreign, territory, she said they'd never seen, toilets or elevators. It was so fascinating to just be moved from a completely different environment. But she ended up getting very involved in the movement, the 60s in the Bay Area. So she helped with the Black Panthers and the civil rights movements and the Equal Rights Amendment movements and the takeover of Alcatraz by the Indian folks at the time. And I mean, she was just this, kind of involved in all these organic grassroots empowering movements, and took that back to Oklahoma. So it was a building block to her leadership. And in all honesty, as a director, filming in San Francisco and sort of reliving and recreating those moments was an exciting experience for me. My father had been taken on that same program and relocated to San Francisco just coincidentally. So I was born and raised in California, but just to go back and experience that from a filmatic sensibility was very exciting. I mean, there's nothing like San Francisco in the 60s. So
right.
It was very interesting for me as a filmmaker.
So this whole relocation effort is orchestrated by the same man who orchestrated the removal of Japanese Americans, right? Yeah. So there's this connection here that there's something at stake, and there's an intention behind the relocation to not just provide these people with a place where they might find a job, but to separate them from each other.
It feels very similar to the boarding school system.
Yeah.
It feels like an Anglicization attempt, or certainly an attempt of assimilation. And the parallels are very disturbing. I thought we found some very well-spoken scholars that studied this and spoke about it with an educated sense of, let's look at history and let's make sure this doesn't repeat, because this was a thoughtful placement of this person at the VIA who had come out of that the Japanese internment camp. And interestingly enough, our editor, one of our editors, Ken Schneider, has won awards for editing one of the documentaries about the Japanese internment camps. And so I think, you know, one of the positives is that documentary film can shed light on some of these things and really bring about an awareness that, you know, this cannot be repeated. And if we look at some of these patterns, we really have to be aware that there was an attempt to not just hurt people in general, but to really take away entire cultures and histories and ancestral, you know, memory, as it were. And I just think that we have to recognize how strong our culture and tradition is to have survived some of this, whether it be the Japanese culture or the American Indian culture, and just have a respect for what we've been through and what we've had to really survive to maintain the culture.
You have so many different voices represented and so much footage of Wilma Mankiller, who died in 2010. Who was essential to you, where you just said, in order to make this documentary, we have to talk to these people? Who felt so important to you going in?
Well, I think not just in terms of on camera, but behind the camera, we needed to have her family and her widower. So Charlie Soap and Christina Kill, who were very close to her, came on as producers, as well as Gina and Felicia, her daughters, because we always feel that the broader picture is important. So the CNN news footage is important, but the home footage, scrapbooks from the family, that's even more important. We wanted to make sure this was about her as a person, not just her public persona. And so that was essential, and we were thrilled to have them involved. And just they've been so additive, you know, being able to speak to her, her home life as well as her public life, and then getting scrapbooks and photos and home video. I have to tell you, from an editing standpoint and a format standpoint, it's been a challenge, because I think we ended up with 750 different pieces of film and footage from all types of formats, you know, so just converting everything and trying to get everything to fit into a high def format was challenging, but that was exciting too, you know. And when you watch this, you can tell we left, as a choice, as a directorial choice, we left everything untouched. So there's some shaky footage from the home video cameras, as you know, well as stuff from the 60s. And it was very exciting. But I also, once we had the family on board, I wanted to try to get a broad sense of people that knew her, not just, again, in terms of heads of states, but also people in the community. So we have those people whose, you know, kitchen tables she went and sat down with in the Cherokee community, fluent Cherokee speakers that benefited, say, from the water project, who didn't have running water and then were able to get running water because of one of her projects. But also people like Tom Cole, who worked with her, and he's a senator from Oklahoma, and you know, the current chief of the Cherokee Nation. And we have Bill and Hillary Clinton in there. And, you know, it's just so interesting to us how she was as comfortable with people like Gloria Steinem, who was one of her best friends, as well as, you know, the local Cherokee villager. And everyone said she was so humble that she really was comfortable, as comfortable in the White House as in that little village home. So it wasn't as if there was one person. It was more we needed the wide spectrum of every life she touched. And I would say for me as a director, though, and being a woman, being able to sit down with Gloria Steinem in her living room and interview her was amazing. That interview became very, very important, I think, to the film. Yeah.
What's she like, Gloria Steinem?
Amazing. I think the most surprising thing is, having grown up watching Gloria and just being such a fan, I think I viewed her as this sort of fist-pounding activist, you know, that she is and was. But when you meet her, she has so much quiet strength and intelligence. She doesn't need to pound her fist. You know, she's just so smart and has so much to say, but she says it with a smile. She's very calm. She couldn't be more graceful and eloquent. And I think she embodies sort of that same Wilma spirit of strength and humility and strength and quietness, but having a lot that is behind all that, you know. So she was just amazing, and she's someone that I could talk to for hours and did, you know, while the cameras were setting up, I talked to her for quite a while about everything, and just was so impressed with her knowledge of indigenous cultures and world travels. And we then had the opportunity to screen this at Athena Film Festival, and she came on stage with us. And, you know, one of the things she said is Wilma always reminded us that we're not ranked, but we're linked, you know, and it's really that kind of collective DNA that she talked about in the film, but just understanding that at some point we're all connected as human beings.
This, you mentioned Wilma Mankiller's humility, and there's some footage that you have where she's saying, you know, I don't really have any great legacy. I did what I could. And that to me seems like, you know, you make an entire film about really her legacy and the things that she did. But she really believed that she was just sort of doing the next thing that was in front of her because she saw, you know, somebody without running water and decided that is not how people should live these days. And so she went and just kind of did the next thing.
She was such a servant leader. And when we started this film, we thought we were doing a biography, which I think we still have done. But where things have evolved to in our political climate across the board, I think the message is so much more relevant now. It took us a long time to make the film, and now it's coming out, though, at I think at the perfect time, because her message was reach across the aisle, don't use labels, it doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican, Indian, non-Indian, it just really doesn't matter. Gender, if there's work to be done, we're here to serve if you're an elected leader. And, you know, and she also said she got more things done by doing it in the least divisive way.
Right,
so there was no yelling at people. And she also really wanted to listen to her opponents. If someone had an opposing viewpoint, she said, I want to hear it because maybe I can incorporate it into the solution. Maybe they have a valid concern that I should be aware of. And we've lost so much of that. And so, you know, part of this film really is a message to get back to that sort of humble servant attitude with our elected leadership. It would be fabulous and effective.
and that takes me back to the beginning of the documentary, and then you handle it with this delicate brush, but it does sort of serve as a narrative thread that there was this matriarchal society in the Cherokee Nation before, in fact, the American government, as they negotiated, made fun of them for having this petticoat government because the women had to be there. And you sort of see her take her place in that, and you see the differences between how she leads from some of the traditional patriarchal society stereotypes, I guess. So that's a very important theme through this film as well, including, you know, input from Betty Friedan or you know, footage of Betty Friedan and input from Gloria Steinem.
Exactly. And I think, well, part of it was in her autobiography, in Wilma's autobiography. She says, if ever there's a film or any story made about me, it cannot just be about me. I want the Cherokee history in there. And so we felt obligated, but we also thought it was a very important part of the overall story of her leadership. And many tribes, pre-European contact, had been matriarchal. And I think the difference, and maybe the misunderstanding, is it was matriarchal doesn't mean that women control everything and men mean nothing.
Right.
It's a balance of power. There is, you know, the men and the women, you know, utilize their strengths together for good. And it just seems like they had gotten so far away from that. By the time Wilma returned to the nation, it was very much a sexist, kind of misogynistic society.
Now we're going to have to cut you off here because we're out of time, but it's a fabulous documentary, and it is perfect for our time that we live in now. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
The film is called Mankiller. You can see it throughout the month for Women's History Month on SDPB TV. First time, March 14th. That's this Wednesday, 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain. And again at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain.